Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 14th of February 2012. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Your readers today are Lynn Parker.
Hello.
Michael Wyard.
Hello.
And Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Hampshire battles to beat the floods, County faces months of flooding, and benefits cheat mum claimed almost £50,000. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Lynn?
This is Hampshire battles to beat the floods. Water levels continue to rise in Winchester, by Andrew Napier, Wesley Rock, Lauren Howard and Charlotte Neal. The Army and Navy have joined hundreds of residents in the desperate battle against floodwater in Winchester and surrounding villages. Some 100 personnel from HMS Collingwood and HMS Sultan and 12 firefighters worked on Tuesday night to build a second sandbag wall in Water Lane and were due to return to lay a barrier in River Park as the Chronicle went to press. Across Hampshire, some 60 homes have flooded. Winchester Fire Station is being used as a joint briefing centre for emergency services, and the City Council's Bar End depot has been a base for filling sandbags. Community payback offenders have been helping volunteers, council staff and firefighters with the work. The floods have caused transport chaos, disrupting trains and closing many roads. The crisis is set to deepen, with more rain forecast over the next few days. The water levels are close and in some places even higher than the winter of 2000 and 2001. Winchester City Council Deputy Leader Roy Humby said, "We are very concerned about certain areas now. Winchester is moving up the scale of worst hit areas and the Environment Agency is very concerned at the moment." The Council Cabinet yesterday heard a proposal that £100,000 be set aside for flood relief. Councillor Stephen Godfrey said, "This is an estimate of the costs, but if we can make such funding available, then we should do so. I think it's really important that we act now to minimise the devastation so many people across the district have faced." River Park Leisure Centre closed at 11 p.m. on Tuesday night until further notice. Pizza Express has been shut because of a flooded basement. St Bede's Primary School is having to temporarily relocate for the second time in only 14 years. Some 300 of the younger pupils from reception to year four are to move first to the Westgate and then to Henry Beaufort Schools after the half-term holiday. The school was closed on Monday and Tuesday because of problems with the toilets. Last weekend, dozens of parents and staff rallied to lay a sandbag wall. Chairman of Governors, Dominic Hiscott, said the toilet issues couldn't have been predicted. "I don't know if it was a foreseeable problem. The blame lies with the weather and not with anyone else." The Pilgrim School has also been disrupted and the ancient hall has been submerged under 2 inches of water. Lucy Brown, head of pre-prep, said, "The children are just terribly excited by the whole thing." Terry Farragher, 80, of Water Lane, said, "We were very nervous because it's starting to lap up against the edge. We're just battening down the hatches and crossing our fingers. What more can you do?" Sue Dipper, 53, of Water Lane, said on Monday, "If it bursts, it bursts. There's nothing we can do about it. The Environment Agency and the council have been absolutely amazing, and the fire brigade were out yesterday helping to build the river defences, as was Keith, my husband. Quite a few people from up and down this street came out to lend a hand." Rob Heathcock, City Council Assistant Director, Environment, said, "All the sluices are now open on the top and the bottom, so it is now just up to the lack of the gods. There's nothing we can do to stop the water coming further up, and we're warning people at North Walls about it. I just wish that it would stop raining. Lawrence Torks of the Environment Agency said, the water level is still rising and I think it's already about 2 inches over the level we would expect it to be. We've managed it differently and learning the lessons from 2000. The buildings that have flooded, Pizza Express and City Mill, are below river level and we can't do anything about that.
My piece is headed Weather Misery. County faces months of flooding. This is just the start. As villagers battle the rising levels, an Environment Agency specialist yesterday grimly warned that Hampshire could be besieged by floodwater for months. Rod Murchie, water resources specialist, said, it has barely started. The problem is groundwater, not rivers. The dry valleys on the downland are starting to flow with water, and this will last for weeks at the very least, perhaps months. Even if it stopped raining today, there's a lot of water right up to the Candovers that has to come down to the valley and through Winchester. Mr. Murchie, whose experience goes back to the 1970s, said this year was comparable to 2000, 2001 and 1960. The difference this year to 2000 is that the rainfall has been concentrated in only 2 months. In 2000, it was over 5 or 6. This time, we had a very dry November, and we were even thinking about winter drought. At Easton, watercourses were being blocked to ease the pressure downstream. Huge one-ton sandbags have been placed in the Itchen by the M3 on Tuesday, and last night, to slow the flow, Winnell Moors Nature Reserve has flooded and eased the pressure on the city. Major Mario Pirozzola, Royal Engineers, said that in Water Lane yesterday, sandbags are part of what every soldier will do in the British Army. The soldiers love it and are delighted to help in the community. Residents in Easton yesterday expressed concerns at the risks to nearby fields and homes. Penny Flemons, chairman of Itchen Valley Parish Council, said, I understand that the authorities need to make a decision about it and protect the most people. But obviously, we were a little concerned that homes might be compromised by it. MP Steve Brine said, it is a real roll of the dice. It is not something that has been done before, but it's necessary. Across the district, flood signs and sandbags have been appearing, and water pumps have been whirring. Many roads have been closed through traffic, including the A272 at Bramdean, which now resembles a river along a long stretch of Hinton Ampner. In Kingsworthy, there was also anger at speeding. Chevy Eaton of Forbes Road said, people are driving through and causing big waves which flow down the hill. They drive at such silly speeds. Other local roads with major problems yesterday were the A31, the A32, B3006, B3046 and the B3349. But across the district, communities have come together to try to offset disaster. Hundreds of sandbags have been filled and placed as neighbours work together. In Twyford, Barrier Watch has been launched and prevented inundations in Hazley Road. In Cheriton, Pat Lawrence, flooding coordinator, said the main concern is the levels, if the levels continue to rise, was the electricity substation. If it continues and we lose power, that could be a serious problem. Pumps wouldn't work and houses could potentially flood. No homes have yet flooded, and Mark Hart Bartlett said, it's down to the tireless efforts of volunteers, mainly Mr. Lawrence, who he described as a local hero who deserves recognition. The worst and longest affected village has been Hambledon, where Tony Hyam said, we've had sewage flow into two properties downstairs. One is a lady with a teenager and the other has two small children. Also badly affected has been Littleton and King Somborne, where villager Simon Harwood said, "It's not just Winchester that's suffering. There has been no help in our village." At Preston Candover, 6 homes flooded. Keith Irons, parish council chairman, said, "The village is now in a very large pond, as is the churchyard, and several properties now have water coming up into their houses." Many businesses have been affected. Gemma Morgan, manager of the Good Life Centre in Hedbourne Worthy, said, "The business has been quite badly hit because people either assume we are closed or they just don't want to travel out to us in this weather. There is essentially a river flowing along the road outside, and it's the only way the water can flow." At the Hinton Arms, Hinton Ampner, Roger Mattia, the owner, said, "We've had numerous cancellations, and the council have put a road closed sign down the road, though it's not really closed. It will remain pretty quiet for the time being."
Benefits cheat mum claimed almost £50,000. Authorities not told that she was no longer single. A reconciliation with her husband turned a Winchester woman into a benefits cheat, a court heard. Susanna Mills defrauded the system of nearly £50,000 when she failed to tell the authorities that she was no longer single. Mills, 45, a carer of Fleming Road Week, had separated from her husband John in 1997, the court heard, and for 13 years she legally claimed housing benefit, income support, and council tax benefit. But after he moved back in 2010, Mills didn't tell anyone. So for 2 years and 8 months, she illegally claimed £49,578.62, Winchester Crown Court heard. She pleaded guilty to 2 counts of dishonestly failing to disclose a change in circumstances between March the 19th, 2010 and November the 7th, 2012. Mills told investigators that her husband was only using her home as a CO address. When surveillance photographs showed his parked car outside, she claimed he sometimes slept in the vehicle. Nick Robinson, mitigating, said Mills was previously of good character. She has children, including 1 6-year-old with special needs, she added. Since her dishonesty was discovered, she's been paying back £300 a month, which means she has around 12 years to go before she cleared the total. Sentencing, the judge, Mr. Recorder Simon Foster, said, It's a serious matter, but to your credit, this took place by your doing nothing rather than doing something. Although you allowed this state of affairs to go on from March 2010 to November 2012, the judge imposed a 12-month community order with 200 hours unpaid work. And there's a picture of Susanna Mills leaving the court in Winchester.
And that concludes the headlines. Now we have the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Bristow, Trevor Bristow, after a long battle with cancer, aged 56. Broadway, Simon Broadway. Busk, Anthea Busk, at Horton. Coupland, Mary Coupland, in Winchester Hospital. Gigg, Charles Edward Gigg, formerly of Week, aged 99. Jacobs, Rosemary June Jacobs, formerly of Water Lane, aged 88, in Maryland, USA. Jameson, Marjorie Jameson, in Guildford, formerly of Winchester, aged 95. Pierce, Eddie Pierce, tragically aged 18. Stout, Victoria, formerly Victor Stout, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 78. And Thomas, Susanna Thomas, suddenly aged 81. Christian comment this week is read by Lynn. Thank you, Lynn.
And this is Christian comment by Rosemary A. Baker. Love your neighbour, especially in these trying times. Hooray! My car has a new number plate. I lost the old one on the flooded road to King Somborne on Monday, en route to take a school assembly. A huge wave hit my car at Little Somborne Corner, so I suspect that's where it happened. Luckily, the engine only spluttered, and I made it to the school and returned another way. When I spoke in assembly about what had happened to me, I couldn't stop the flow of stories from the children telling me what had happened to them and their families. We have been very fortunate so far, although I am keeping a close eye on the septic tank. But others in our village have not been so fortunate. Other parts of the south and southwest have been even more sorely afflicted. I heard somebody ask, well, what have we done to deserve all this? A UKIP councillor, who blamed it on David Cameron and the gays, has been removed from his post. He is not the first to blame homosexuals, as it seems to be quite common in America. I think they see it as God's punishment for humanity's wrongdoing. David Cameron has called the floods biblical, though I'm not sure in what way he was referring. The duration, the degree, or what, as even though dreadful, they are in no way compared to what some countries experience, or the legendary flood in the Bible at the time of Noah. What I am quite sure he was not referring to is the fact that they are God's punishment, as we are told they were at Noah's time. Yes, we have been foolish in our planning and our building. We have been greedy and gone for maximum gains in the short term. But we are to blame for this, not God. Global warming may have played its part, but I am not qualified to comment. God is not punishing us, but is leaving us to make our own choices and suffer the consequences. What an opportunity, though, for us to show our Christian concern for our neighbours. You don't have to be a Christian to do this, and many volunteers are not Christian, or even, indeed, religious. But shouldn't Christians be at the forefront, doing what we can? We have Jesus' New Testament telling us that we have a God who loves us and cares for us. Jesus said he had given us a new commandment, to love our neighbours as ourselves. What an opportunity as well to show our children by example how to care for others.
Now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Michael.
What happened to that bus station? Sir, says Keith Wood. Keith Wood, leader of the Winchester City Council, tells us what a wonderful scheme the Silver Hill development is going to be. In the plans, 330 parking spaces are included, but significantly for those of us who don't drive, no, as previously promised, no new bus station. Just as in Southampton, we will have to trudge the streets looking for the appropriate stop for our destination and hoping there will be a shelter in which to huddle from the rain with our shopping. I suggest the planners take a trip to Sheffield, where residents and visitors can enjoy a covered and heated bus station replete with seats, screens, showing departures, shops and cafes. Also, if there is no bus station in Winchester, where will the bus drivers obtain refreshments and rest between duties? And this letter came from Roderick Youngman, who lives in Cromwell Road, Winchester.
Can Carla confirm drainage will work? Carla Holmes claimed to have made full and adequate provision for drainage at Barton Farm. Will they therefore confirm that if and when we next experience a foot of rain in 6 weeks, their proposed drainage system will be able to cope and not increase river levels downstream in Winchester? If they can't guarantee this, then they must surely accept full responsibility for any flooding this development might cause to our city in the future. Building and concreting over hundreds of acres of arable land on high ground to the north of Winchester dictates that surface water that can't be soaked up in the ground must go somewhere. In the case of Barton Farm, what option is there other than the River Itchen? And that's from Paul Wing, Silchester Place, Hyde, Winchester.
Give thanks for Yuletide Market. Sir, Mr. Jackson said there were no letters in favour of Winchester Christmas Market from residents, letters January the 30th. Could this be because most of them realise the market brings joy to many visitors and residents alike? It also helps to provide badly needed funds for our beautiful cathedral and profit to many restaurants and retailers, albeit with short-term inconvenience. Traffic congestion is a problem, it is true, but no doubt this will be solved in time. For instance, 2013 seemed less difficult driving and parking than 2012, and it would be a shame if the Killjoys did away with one of our great attractions. Give thanks that we have a Christmas market superior to many in Europe within walking or public transport distance, and we are therefore able to proudly introduce it to our family and friends from further afield. Could we please start thinking positively rather than negatively? Perhaps readers could come up with ideas to help the council sort the congestion problems caused by the market before next winter. As for congestion in the market itself, I didn't notice a problem, but on very busy days and at peak times, perhaps a free timed ticket entry could be used. This might get more visitors to use our shops and restaurants while waiting for their time slot. And this was by Geraldine Guthrie, Milesdown Place, Winchester.
Next letter comes from Paul Twelvetree, and it's headed, Happy with Tories when it suited him. Sir, it is hubris on the part of Councillor Scott to say it in his personal appeal to the it is his personal appeal to voters that got him elected. That was reported in the Chronicle of February the 6th. This isn't borne out by my experience as Deputy Chairman Political for the Tories for 5 years and his political agent on two occasions. The Conservatives have a respectable record of winning in St Luke. Not an easy seat for them. In the 7 district elections since 2004, they won 3 of them, defeating both sitting Labour and Liberal councillors. We unfortunately didn't win in 2010 when our candidate, one Jamie Scott, lost by over 300 votes. We obviously failed to tap into his personal appeal on that occasion. I have found that all councillors and candidates of all parties seek election to improve the wards they represent in one way or another. They are, on the whole, men and women of principle. When it suited him, Councillor Scott was happy to support the Conservatives and Conservative policies, and in return received the support of the party when it selected him as candidate. I understand that on deciding to leave the Conservatives, he first approached Labour, but was rebuffed, before deciding on the Liberal Democrats. Hardly conviction politics. If Councillor Scott is sure of his own personal popularity, then he should stand down now and seek re-election under his new colours, or even as an independent. What does he have to lose? Says Paul Twelvetree of Berriton Road, Hairstock.
John Doyle writes, Better a NIMBY than a hypocrite. Sir, Chris Higgins states that NIMBYism does not form a principal part of the objection by local people in Hyde to the expansion of the leisure centre at River Park. As I understand it, the pressure group either wants an improved leisure centre or are agnostic about this. But whichever is the case, they do not want the leisure centre to encroach into the playing fields at River Park. So they point to Bar End as a better location, where a new centre would be built over, yes, playing fields. Summary, not here, but somewhere else. This is NIMBYism in my understanding of the term, but they should not worry unduly about this. There's nothing wrong with seeking to protect your own neighbourhood, and it's better to be a NIMBY than a hypocrite. As for Bar End, the garrison ground is designated countryside in the local plan and protected from anything that would destroy its rural character. Youth football leagues play there every weekend. Dogs are walked. Families have kickabouts. children climb trees, and I believe King Alfred collected conkers there as a child, although I can't vouch for this. Any plan to build a leisure centre on the garrison ground would involve a deal with the owner, Tesco, to build houses on the rest of the site, rendering the local plan impotent and resulting in an entire loss of the playing fields. Anybody interested in the fitness of our citizens in the future ought to be opposed to this. And that's from John Doyle, Chilcombe Lane, Winchester.
Two opinions at the same time. Sir, one has come to expect indecision from Liberal Democrat politicians. First they wanted an EU referendum, now they don't. Recently they have been undecided whether uninvited groping of women by some senior members is right or wrong. Most would have no difficulty deciding this issue. Just as curious is their ability to hold two different opinions at the same time. I've worked on public health projects in Tower Hamlets, and I'm old enough to remember Lib Dem campaigners in that London borough distributing anti-immigration leaflets in white areas and pro-immigration leaflets in the areas dominated by the ethnic minorities. Here in Winchester, we have another example. In her recent letter about electricity cuts, Councillor Jackie Porter, Lib Dem prospective MP from Winchester and Chandler's Ford, cites trees as an important feature of a Hampshire landscape. How then does she reconcile her concerns with the Lib Dem support for clusters of 400-foot high wind turbines which will intrude upon vast swathes of that same landscape? These power stations will be visible across hundreds of square miles of countryside. They will certainly be visible from Winchester and Chandler's Ford. Faced with the choice, most local people might prefer our current MP, Steve Brine, who supports an EU referendum and opposes these giant wind turbines. And this is from Keith Story, St Cross Road, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. I repeat, 01962 860 836. You can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Glancing to the past, we begin with the news from 200 years ago, read by Michael. Thank you, Michael.
200 years ago, February the 14th, 1814, and it's headed 9 months prison for libel. Mrs. Mary Ann Clark was this day brought up to the court of the King's Bench to receive judgment for a libel on the Right Honourable W. Fitzgerald, imputing him to the seduction of his friend's wife, the sending of that friend by his influence to an unhealthy clime with a view of obtaining his death, and the administering of deleterious drugs to the object of his guilty amours for the purpose of procuring abortion. The defendant was sentenced to 9 months imprisonment in the King's Bench prison, and W. Mitchell, for printing the same, was sentenced to 4 months' imprisonment. A separate case. Yesterday, William Earle, who had suffered judgment to proceed against him by default under an indictment for printing and publishing a libel in The Scourge upon J.C. Buckhart, jeweller, was brought up to receive the judgment of the King's Bench. The libel charged Mr. Burkhart with being the illegitimate progeny of a Dutch fisherman and an oyster wench, of being educated in vice and beggary, of being sent out of his own country for frequenting seditious meetings in England and belonging to the Corresponding Society. And all this abuse appeared to spring from the envy of some rival workman. The court adjudged the defendant to pay a fine of £100 and to be imprisoned for 6 calendar months in Newgate.
And 100 years ago, on February the 14th, 1914, property found after burglary. We understand that on Thursday, the head constable of Winchester, Mr. John Sim, recovered in London another quantity of the silver articles which were stolen recently from Winton House, and that yesterday Chief Inspector Simmons of the Winchester Police Force obtained possession of further articles also in London. This means that the greater part of the stolen property has now been traced and recovered. Mention was made last week of the fact that the police have arrested in the provinces a man who, it was believed, was associated with the burglary at Winton House. This belief has since become a certainty, for beyond a shadow of doubt, it is the man. And secondly, sir, the Winchester Town Council has let a most important resolution lie on the table and has refused to deal with it. The resolution was one in favour of petitioning Parliament to grant the parliamentary vote to women, and should surely have been discussed by a body of men returned by votes of women as well as those of men. It has been passed by 180 of the most important town councils of Great Britain and numerous other public bodies, and the Glasgow Council has sent a deputation to the Prime Minister demanding that the vote shall be granted to women.
50 years ago, February 15, 1964, Wessex Hotel set to open. The Wessex Hotel, built in the northern precinct of Winchester Cathedral, had its housewarming on Thursday, when Sir Geoffrey Crowther, Chairman of Trust Houses Limited, welcomed civic dignitaries and leaders of professional and commercial life in the city at a luncheon party. The hotel, which opens to the public today, Saturday, has cost over £600,000 to build and has been under construction for the past 2 years. Its design is entirely modern, with much of the internal detail based on studies in Scandinavia and America. There are 93 bedrooms, each with private bathroom, radio and television. And secondly, sir, the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents is becoming increasingly concerned at the number of discarded second-hand electric, gas and oil household appliances being offered for sale at jumble sales. May I, through your columns, appeal on behalf of the Winchester and District Accident Prevention Council to all organisers of jumble sales, etc., to satisfy themselves that all such appliances offered for sale are in a safe and serviceable condition for use in the home by having them examined by a qualified person.
These next pieces come from Hampshire Chronicle from the files of 25 years ago, February 17, 1989, and it's headed "Chain Stores Let the City Down." Winchester is blooming awful, even worse than Eastleigh. That's been the verdict of the Britain in Bloom judges ever since the city entered the competition 4 years ago. High marks always go to the council-maintained Abbey Gardens and Guildhall, but the floral displays in the shopping centre let the side down. The unwillingness of chain stores to spend out on hanging baskets and window boxes means that each year the city cannot match its rival town in the flower stakes and is always placed low in the national competition. Another item here, the Winchester City Council will decide on March the 1st whether the Theatre Royal is to be or not to be. That is the question which will face the councillors as they decide whether to grant the theatre the £46,000 subsidy it wants or to restrict their grant to £23,000 and put the future of live theatre in Winchester in doubt. The second act in this year's theatre funding drama was played out on Monday as the Policy and Resources Committee decided to grant the theatre the money it wants to survive.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Brian and will be followed by First Person read by Michael. Thank you, Brian.
Learn lessons and fund flood defences. There can be few more heartbreaking sights than seeing your cherished home underwater. The extraordinary floods that many parts of England are currently experiencing will live long in the memory. Here in the Winchester district and in southern Hampshire, Many homes have been battling the elements, putting out sandbags, helping neighbours and shepherding people and traffic through flooded roads. Even the military has been mobilised. Inevitably, the blame has swung into full effect, with Environment Agency and government coming in for much criticism. Of course, it must be said that there are no guarantees that some of the measures being suggested, particularly those for the Somerset Levels, would have been the answer, given the extreme weather patterns we are experiencing. But lessons must be learned. Experts from the Netherlands have been flown into the UK to advise out how they have managed to escape major flooding since the early 1960s. The answer is that the Dutch spend five times as much as we do tackling such issues. There's no choice but to property fund the kind of measures that will protect people and their property in a very turbulent future.
Canidas is right. It's a mad world, I know, but there are limits. On the same day, the Princes Charles and William announce a father and son campaign to tackle illegal poaching, and Copenhagen Zoo slaughters poor Marius, a perfectly healthy young giraffe, because his genes were allegedly too close to the European captive giraffe gene pool. Animal rights people have been having a field day. Before I go on, I should declare an interest. I shoot pheasants and partridge mainly, and grouse if I'm lucky enough to be asked. I also stalk deer from time to time, and I have also hunted. To me, it's a major part of one's makeup. Call it atavistic if you like, but it is one of those things which is hard to explain to those who have never participated. I'm also keenly interested in the conservation and trenchantly against the mindless killing of any animal. So, how can these things be squared? How can heirs to the throne, fresh from the killing fields of Sandringham and the Spanish plains, bang on about stopping the slaughter of elephants and rhino for their tusks and horn? Both activities bring economic benefit for those organising and providing the activity. At Sandringham and other shooting estates across the country, the employment of game rearers, keepers, beaters, pubs and caterers provides a boost to rural areas that would shut down during the winter and arguably not be there at all if it wasn't for the well-heeled shooters at the top of the tree showering money on the situation. And the mainly Chinese who buy powdered horn and tusk, not to mention other parts of other endangered species, tigers, in the belief it will boost their health and sexual prowess, and also arguably providing a stimulus that reaches all the way to the African savanna and the swamps of Bengal. On a recent trip to Africa, as we travelled from location to location, one would pass lorry loads of smartly uniformed soldiers. "Anti-poaching force," explained our driver, adding, "useless." And indeed they were, compared to the privately owned safari parks, where they managed to look after the animals far better, maintaining abundant numbers compared with state-run parks. Corruption is probably the explanation. What makes the difference is not pleasure, real or imagined, but that awful word, sustainability. Killing rhino and tiger for body parts is like selling the family silver. Once it's gone, it's gone. Shooting pheasants and partridge reared for the purpose is sustainable, whether you agree with it or not. Shooters and hunters the world over know this. In Hampshire, much of the countryside enjoyed by walkers owes its existence to shooting. No shooting, and farming pressure would push us towards a more prairie-like landscape. However, there are limits. Shooting an otherwise healthy giraffe and then dissecting him in front of an appalled crowd because of European breeding laws smacks of eugenics. UKIP have just been delivered a new recruiting sergeant.
Belgorum's alternative look at the news this week comprises four items, the first of which is read by Lynn. Thank you, Lynn.
This week, Belgorum is looking at bodged repairs make a hole in the council's budget. Good job this theatre is not that cold. The epidemic of potholes in recent months would be even worse if ice was a factor instead of just water. Local businessman Keith Webb took these three photographs recently in Weston Lane, and we have three photographs of potholes. It shows the pothole, the repair, and then the almost immediate disintegration of the repair. Mr. Webb of Quarry Road said, "The repair is really disgusting. Anyone filling in a hole should do it properly and seal it with tar." There have been a couple of repairs in Ranelagh Road as well, and they're already coming out. Any reputable contractors employed to fill in potholes should work to a better standard than this. It is quite obvious that whatever council department commissioned the work did not inspect it afterwards, Mr. Webb told Belgorum.
The next item is accompanied by a photograph of a muddy area of the cathedral close with a sign saying, "Keep off the grass." And it's headed, "Grass goes AWOL, but we'll be back." Grass? What grass? Reader Jeanette Cutter of St Stephen's Road Week said she chuckled when she saw the sign in Cathedral Close recently. It shows the bare area where the grass has been damaged by the ice rink and Christmas market chalets. The good news is that grass is usually a resilient plant and should be back by the summer. He doesn't add if it's stopped raining by then.
A marathon a week will be the toughest test for Nigel. Nigel Bird from Four Marks is marking his 52nd birthday by taking on a gruelling challenge. He plans to run 52 marathons over 52 weeks to raise funds for the NSPCC. Nigel, whose photograph is shown, who runs his own building company, decided to run a marathon a week after learning that a friend had experienced abuse during his childhood. He began his marathon task on January the 5th in Alton. Over the next year, he'll tackle 36-mile routes across Hampshire every Sunday, as well as further afield. He's hoping to raise £20,000. Father of three, Nigel, explained, "The discovery of a friend's childhood abuse, coupled with my own experiences, spurred me to do something to help children just as he has, especially now that the NSPCC has rolled out its new Childline school service, which aims to educate children about abuse before it starts and show how to get help if they need it." The sponsor, Nigel's 52 at 52 challenge visit, is Just Giving page at www.justgiving.com/NigelBird-marathon52@52.
Long, lingering demise of the last payphone. The wheels of justice can turn slowly, but this is ridiculous. The press room at the law courts in Winchester has long been a base for reporters and photographers when they cover newsworthy cases. Back in the days, long before mobiles and laptops, there was a rank of public phones that the reporters would use near deadline to send their stories through to copy takers at the newspaper. The last public phone was removed on Friday. A letter left by staff helpfully explained that the costs incurred far outweighed the income. In the previous 6 months, only £3.90 was taken in coins, but it cost £190.06. Fair enough. But the letter was dated June the 22nd, 1999. So it took nearly 15 years to action.
Now this week's announcements. And we begin with what's on. Here are some events which are coming up in and around Winchester. On Wednesday the 19th of February, Tony Buckland, celebrity gardener, will give a talk at the Winchester Discovery Centre about his latest book, Planning and Planting for Continuous Colour. That is at 7 p.m. and costs £16. and the next day, Thursday the 20th February, and also Friday the 17th of March, also at the Discovery Centre, John Pilkington will give a talk on his Balkan adventure at 7:30 p.m. on each date. The cost of those is £10. For Discovery Centre events, bookings can be made in person or by telephoning 01962 873 603. That's 01962 873 603. On Saturday the 22nd of February, at St Michael's Church, Cheriton at 7 p.m, there's an illustrated talk by Douglas Skeggs, art historian, entitled Art in the Garden of God. Tickets are £12 and can be obtained by telephoning 01962 771 263. That's 01962 771 263. Benjamin Britten's War Requiem is being performed also on Saturday the 22nd of February at Winchester Cathedral at 7:30 p.m. Tickets range from £15 to £30 and are available at the Cathedral box office or by telephoning 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And finally, the National Theatre's production of War Horse comes to the Mayflower Theatre, Southampton, from the 19th of February to the 15th of March. Further details are available on 023 8071 1811. That's 023 8071 1811. Lighting Up Time ended today, will end today, Friday the 14th of February at 7:22 a.m. and will begin at 5:17 p.m. On Wednesday the 19th of February, it ends at 7:11 a.m. and begins at 5:28 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news. And the first item is read by Lynn. Thank you, Lynn.
Golf club raided. Burglars who targeted an unnamed Winchester golf club have received suspended jail sentences. Stuart Forbes, 38, from Portsmouth, and Ashley Boyle, 30, from Southsea, originally denied stealing clubs valued at £1,340 on April the 24th last year, but changed their pleas. Basingstoke magistrates jailed the pair for 3 months, suspended for 2 years, and ordered them to do 100 hours community service. They were each ordered to pay £670 compensation, an £80 victim surcharge, and costs of £150.
Masked men barge into home. Two men barged their way into a Winchester home, terrifying the people inside. Detectives appealed for witnesses following the aggravated burglary on Battery Hill, Stanmore. Two men knocked on the door, forced their way in when it was answered. One of the men was masked and demanded money, but they left after being challenged by the occupant. Nothing was stolen from the address, and no one was injured in the incident between 10:50 p.m. and 11:05 p.m. on Tuesday, January the 28th. Police revealed this week. The first suspect is 6'4" to 6'6" tall and was wearing a balaclava covering his face and dark coloured clothing. The second was described as 5'3" to 5'6" tall, was medium length, dark scruffy hair, tanned complexion and wearing a dark jacket. Detective Con Richard Jones said, Constable Richard Jones said, fortunately, incidents like this are extremely rare and nobody was injured, but this was a very frightening experience for the residents. Anyone with information is asked to contact Detective Constable Jones at Winchester Police Station by phoning 101.
Winchester to New Primary School is under construction. What does a head teacher with no school, teaching staff or pupils actually do? Stuart Adlam was employed a year before Westgate Primary School opened its gates to the first 60 reception pupils in September 2014. But he has been busy, Mr. Adlam says, building a strong foundation for learning at the first county-run all-through school for pupils aged 4 to 16. We want to make sure the new lower school was not a bolt-on and I was properly integrated with the leadership team, said Mr. Adlam, a married father of five, whose wife, Catherine, teaches at the Four Marks Primary School near Alsford. Among his first duties was meeting parents who had to choose which primary school to send their children to by January the 14th. A shortage of primary school places in the city, coupled with a lack of suitable sites for a new school, are behind the radical shift to the Westgate all-through school. Instead of a primary and secondary school sat side by side on the same campus, it will be very much one school, stresses Paul Nicholson, head teacher of the Westgate. He said, the existing secondary school will be the upper school and the new primary school will be the lower school. The restructured leadership team includes Mr. Nicholson as head teacher and Mr. Adlam as lower school leader. Boundaries have been redrawn so the Westgate Lower School catches a catchment area with the Western and St. Bede primary schools. Perhaps not surprisingly, there have been more applications than places, despite it not being yet being built. We're optimistic that we will be full, said Mr. Nicholson. There's been a lot of positive local interest. We held open events for parents that were well attended and were able to show our vision. Parents were shown models of the new building. The first of two reception teachers starts in April, when they will start writing the curriculum. Initially, the Westgate Lower School will just have two reception classes, with other year groups added as the first cohort of pupils progresses up the school. Growing from such small beginnings means we will get to know the children and their families really well, said Mr. Adlam. The choice of site was controversial. Locals were worried about the impact of extra cars from a new 420-place primary school. Parents also had concerns. Some worried young children would be intimidated by teenagers, while others feared the shiny new school would make nearby Western Church of England Primary School look drab and dilapidated. Rotherley House, the red brick former girls' boarding school, escaped the bulldozers because of roosting bats, which are protected by law. Separating the upper and lower school will be a new village green on the site of what is now a concrete park off Green Lane. The new school is designed by award-winning Hampshire County Council architects and will boast 14 classrooms, a hall, kitchen, library and two playgrounds. It will have all the facilities of standalone primary school, said Mr. Adlam, with some extras. And there's a picture of the school under construction, which says underway the new and refurbished primary school. And, it talks about people on another page, so we don't want to know about that. And below is the nursery school.
Get Muddy in Cancer Fundraiser. Winchester has been chosen to host one of the 19 new events from Cancer Research UK's Race for Life. Pretty Muddy, a 5-kilometre course complete with crawling, climbing and muddy obstacles, will be held on June the 7th at Winchester Garrison Ground and University Sports Stadium. Registration is now open for the event and organisers are urging Winchester women to sign up to help best beat cancer. Similar to Race for Life, the course is only open to women and can be run, walked or jogged. For more information, visit www.raceforlife.org or call 0845 600 6050.
Police seek hotel gang thieves. Police believe they could be on the trail of a gang responsible for a series of thefts in Winchester. They have now released images of a man they want to speak to after the same hotel, the Marwell, was targeted on three occasions. The latest incident saw a driving licence and debit card stolen from the room of a guest on January the 22nd. The victim received a call the following morning from someone pretending to be from his bank and saying that there had been suspicious activity on his card. They asked for further details, including his PIN number. The victim didn't reveal his PIN, but thieves still used his card to withdraw £7,000 from his account in Birmingham. The theft follows a near identical crime in September of last year. On that occasion, the card was used to withdraw £2,900 at the Halifax branch on Above Bar, Southampton. A spokesman for Hampshire Constabulary said, "We believe the man in the CCTV may have been working as part of a group, and we will be looking to see if the previous incidents are linked." The man in the image was wearing a blue, lightly quilted jacket and a blue shirt. Anyone with information is asked to contact PC Kaz Bulpit at Winchester Police Station by phoning 101. Minicom users can call the police on 1800 1101, and information can be given anonymously by calling Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111.
Dismay as ACSOs face chop by the county. Safety teams help tackle antisocial behaviour. Armed with police powers and equipped with special vehicles and uniforms, they were one of the county bus's stormtroopers in the war against yobs. But after 10 years of tackling underage drinkers, litterlouts and graffiti artists, former leader Ken Thornber's Community Safety Service is set to stand down. The 36-strong team of accredited community safety officers, ACSOs, who can issue on-the-spot fines, face being cut as part of plans to slash £93 million from the County Council budget. Unions and community leaders condemned the plan, while the Police and Crime Commissioner said the move may make the force's job harder. But Councillor Roy Perry said the work of the county's ACSO service overlapped with the Police Community Support Officers, PCSO, which were introduced later. He said, "I'd be the first to concede they're a good body who have done a good job. There'll be no decision until full council meetings on February the 20th, but I'm scheduling a meeting with the Police and Crime Commissioner before then. However, we do face cuts in the grants. I do not think it would be in anyone's interest to raise council tax, and we have services like libraries that are a statutory obligation and which we wish to protect as far as possible." But Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes said hard-pressed Hampshire police would miss the support of the ACSOs. Government cutbacks mean constabulary will this year receive £41 million less than 4 years ago. Mr. Hayes said ACSOs have been a valuable asset to the police, and it's so disappointing they're being removed. "The decision makes our task more difficult, and the fact is, if we're to maintain levels of public safety, Hampshire Constabulary will have no option than to absorb this loss imposed upon us by the County Council withdrawing the service of ACSOs." Tim Cutter, Branch Secretary of the Hampshire Unison, said, "It's ACSOs feel let down." He said, "I think it's short-sighted and reckless." Councillor Tony Hook, deputy leader of the UKIP County Council group, said, "It's a desperate shame, and we're putting another burden on the police." Liberal Democrat opposition leader Keith House said, "This is going to be devastating for a lot of our communities."
Civil War comes to Westgate Museum. Westgate Museum will reopen this weekend with a reenactment of the English Civil War. Members of the Sealed Knot will gather outside the Westgate from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. this Sunday, February the 16th, where there will be displays of musket and pike drills every half an hour. Musketeers, pikemen and camp followers will muster the old gateway into the city and are inviting people to attend and learn more about the life of a soldier during the war 350 years ago. The museum is reopening after winter and the event is free with no booking required.
Further funding for Heidi's town team. Parish councillors in three of Hampshire's market towns have agreed to continue funding their own Mary Porterhouse. Having previously lauded the success of its town team, headed by Heidi Iser of Bishop's Waltham, Bishop's Waltham, Denmead and Wickham were approached by Winchester City Council to ask if they would continue their funding of Mrs. Iser's position. Her role covers everything from fundraising and marketing to setting up new business networks and raising customer service standards. The City Council has already secured £6,000 from Hampshire County Council to go towards marketing and advertising for the market towns. Mrs. Iser has been in the post for 9 months, and the parishes have each agreed to add £5,000 from their reserves to pay for the second year of her position. Bishop's Waltham failed in its bid to be part of a retail guru Mary Porter's High Street regeneration scheme in 2012, but received a consolation grant of £10,000, which was used towards the hiring of Mrs. Iser to work as a development officer. Her work with the town team has been credited by businesses in the area with boosting media coverage and gaining extra grants, such as the £3,600 from the County Council towards a website promoting the town. Councillor Rob Humby, deputy leader of Winchester City Council, said, "I went round all the businesses in Bishop's Waltham the other day and every business commented on what a great job Heidi had done."
College's deer expert helps track muntjac. Sparsholt College's Game and Wildlife Department has been called upon for advice on the control of muntjac deer, which have recently started to colonise the area. Charles Smith Jones, the college's deer expert, hosted Professor Jamie Dick, who is Professor of Invasion Ecology at the Queen's University Belfast and also contracted by the Northern Ireland Environment Agency to advise how it has to deal with the species. The main aims of Professor Dick's visit were to learn how the muntjac can impact on man and the environment in England, as well as how its numbers are monitored and controlled. Mr. Smith-Jones said muntjac causes significant commercial damage to the agricultural land and private gardens, as well as impacting on the environment by displacing our native species, complete with feeding, competing with them for feed and resources. In large numbers, they'll strip woodland undergrowth, which affects ground nesting birds and small mammals. Mr. Smith-Jones and Professor Dick visited a number of specific sites in Hampshire where Mr. Smith-Jones oversees the deer's population using trail cameras for monitoring purposes. And there's a picture of the two gentlemen mentioned looking like hunters in the woodland and a picture of a muntjac deer, which is tiny apparently.
Excuse me.
England call-up for Westgate star. Team Westgate's rising badminton star, Libby McMorrow, has been called up to the England team for the forthcoming under-17 European Championships. The 16-year-old pupil at Henry Beaufort School started playing badminton when she was 9 years old. She was very quickly spotted by Hampshire Badminton and has since represented Hampshire at under-13, under-15, under-17 and senior level, and is the current English national under-15 doubles champion. McMorrow from Mitchell Deaver said, "To be selected for England has been a dream ever since I started playing, but I still can't believe it's happened." McMorrow is supported by the Hampshire Talented Athlete Scheme and has also been chosen this year to be part of a small team of Adidas badminton prodigy players, along with fellow Westgate teammate Annie Ladu. The European Championships will take part in Ankara, Turkey at the end of March. In total, 31 countries will take part, and England's first opponents will be Norway, Sweden and Ukraine. McMorrow joins fellow Westgate player Ira Banerjee in the English squad. Graham Hurrell, her coach, added, "One of Libby's goals was to represent England. She has now achieved this through hard work and determination and now aims to shine in Europe as well." Nigel Tier, Westgate's head coach, added, "We are thrilled to have another of our players representing England. Libby's is a well-deserved selection, and we wish all the players the very best of luck at the European and forthcoming Nationals."
Age Concern Centre takes step forward. A state-of-the-art facility for the elderly in Bishop's Waltham has moved a step closer. Age Concern Hampshire plans to move to a new building on land by the Parish Council's offices at Jubilee Hall. One half of the building will serve as a daycare centre for the elderly, including dementia services, while the other part of the building will serve as a wellbeing centre, creating around 10 new jobs. Those plans have progressed now, with a formal planning application to Winchester City Council. Rick Smith, Director of Age Concern Hampshire, said, "Every way I think about this, it's a positive thing for Bishop's Waltham residents who need the services but can't travel far, and for the segment of the population who will benefit from the jobs." The site will be built by the Bishop's Waltham Educational Institute, which awards grants in the interests of social welfare and education in the area. Age Concern will rent it from the Institute, which in turn will rent the land from the parish at a peppercorn rent. The charity's nearest facility is at Swanmore Village Hall, and that will continue to operate. The Parish Council is hopeful the move will ease some of its parking problems, as the new facility would add around 60 spaces to the current car park, bringing the total to 140.
All change on the bins. Test Valley Borough Environmental Health Chiefs are changing collection days of wheelie bins for some residents from Monday 24th of February. Letters are being sent out to all 16,000 households affected by the changes. Borough officials say that with hundreds of new homes being built, it's necessary to alter bin rounds. Borough Cabinet spokesman for the Environment, Graham Stallard, said, "If we have introduced a new round rather than accommodating no new developments using existing resources, it would have cost the taxpayer an additional £130,000 a year. Although it does mean that the day we empty some people's bins will be changing, it will save a great deal of money over the coming years and help us to keep council tax down. Garden waste collections are not affected by the change."
Farm shop families heartbreak at theft. Owners of an award-winning farm shop have been left heartbroken after £3,000 worth of produce was stolen. The Beechcroft Farm Shop on Sarum Road near Winchester is a family-run business selling lamb, beef and pork, which has been reared and produced on site. Thieves are believed to have broken in between midnight and 7 a.m. on Saturday, cutting through the back entrance after cutting through the fence and forcing the door open. The shop, which last year won the Hampshire Life Best Farm Shop Award, was left completely empty, apart from several sausages and some beef offal. Rachel Waldron, the shop owner, said it will take a long time to restore the shop to full working order. "We were on a real high after winning the award last year, and now this is a real low. We have to feed the animals up at the moment to get them through these storms, so we have food bills coming in. Financially, we have minimal income now. We hang our beef for 28 days, and although I have a cow that has just gone to the abattoir, we have very minimal stock and it will take us a while to get back off the ground." The shop and farm has been in the family since the 1930s, and newlywed Rachel runs it with her parents, Joy and Nick Waldron. Her father was with her on Saturday morning when they discovered the break-in. She said, "I went to open the shop as normal, and I went out to the back to where the chillers are. We have suffered some storm damage recently, so at first when I saw the door hanging off, I thought it was from strong winds. My father, Dad, came through with me, and that's when we realised there was nothing left. Everything we sell is produced on the farm, and what makes it really worse is that our customers really recognise the quality of it, and there will be somebody out there eating the meat that we have produced, so worked so hard to produce. We had to cancel Sunday Farmers Market for the first time because we had nothing to sell. The family have received handwritten letters and emails from their devoted customers offering their condolences. Police said there are no witnesses or suspects, an investigation will be launched.
Store jumps to it to tidy up skate park area. The battle against litter in a village near Winchester is about to be boosted after two new bins were provided by a local supermarket. Colton Common resident Pam Glasspool contacted the co-op about rubbish gathering near the skate park on St Vigor Way. Miss Glasspool said, "I regularly walk across the village green past the skate park where, sadly, there is always piles of rubbish on the ground. I saw that much of the rubbish was packaging from food and drinks bought from the store the night before by young people who gather there each evening. When I talked to them, they said that most of them tried to keep the place clean, but the broken old bins left everything open to the elements, with birds, animals and the weather helping to spread rubbish all over the place. The council has spent a huge amount on the skate park, and funds were not available for replacement bins, so I made contact with the Southern Cooperative, who immediately responded, liaised with our parish council, and made this happen. The Southern Cooperatives have also recently supported Colden Commons Core Apple Recipe Book, which has so far raised nearly £950 towards the cost of providing a toilet in the village church.
Cash grant is cool for group. Winchester Action on Climate Change, WinACC, is the latest recipient of a Cash for Causes grant. Winchester Roundtable has donated £250 to help the charity help people on lower incomes reduce their fuel bills through its Cool Communities initiative. The project helps get people saving energy and so save money. The money will be used to print materials and run small groups advising people on how to become energy efficient. Susie Phillips, WinACC's Cool Communities project manager, said, "Cool Communities lets people see how they can change their lifestyles by making small changes that make big differences. Roundtable has helped us offer that to all parts of the community. To find out more about Cool Communities, contact susie.phillips@winacc.org.uk. Cash for Causes provides grants to local groups from funds raised from Winchester Roundtable's annual bonfire night. Pictured left is WinACC intern Jade Reedy with the Cool Communities Handbook, and there's a smiling young lady with the handbook showing very prominently.
Westminster Diary by George Hollingbury, MP for the Meon Valley. As I write, most of the Meon Valley constituency is underwater, as increasingly is much of Hampshire. Worse still, the conveyor belt sitting out in the Atlantic seems to be slinging storms at us relentlessly, with at least another 2 or 3 inches of rain forecast over the next few days. This is rapidly becoming an event of truly historic proportion, with January being the wettest recorded since the 18th century, and the December and January totals also breaking records. Now, it is not my intention for this to be an Eeyore-ish parade of the places in my constituency that have been affected and how awful it is. All you need to know is that it's really, really horrible to be flooded, and anyone who has been should have our enormous sympathy. Rather, I want to reflect on how we've reacted to it. As usual, most of those affected across the area have reacted with true stoicism and a determination to help both themselves and others. I could quote you countless examples. Some have demanded action, recognising a political moment when tectonic plates that have stood in the way of flood prevention schemes for years might finally moved enough to let loose a volcano of money sitting underneath. Quite right, too. Some have treated their neighbours with utter contempt. They have sped their cars through other people's damaged communities, flooding doorways and spraying already sodden buildings. They have removed barriers closing badly affected roads so that they can get their children to school a little earlier. One has even attempted to assault a resident who had the temerity to signal to him to slow down. As for the politicians, well, all I can say is that this is no time for blame. This is an extreme event, and I'm not sure that any level of preparation by anyone would have been equal to it. While I fear that the number might now rise quickly, it is a remarkable fact that thus far only 1,500 homes across the county have been flooded during the heaviest downpours ever known. In short, a whole range of people have done a lot of good things to protect us, however much some of these things are finally proved not to be enough. That range includes the Environment Agency and, yes, the last government as well as this one. One final thought. Ask yourselves this. This time round, Winchester didn't flood nearly as rapidly as it did in 2000 to 2001. Why not? Well, I can see one major difference. There is a new owner, Winnell Moors, the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. Under their stewardship, many, many acres above Winchester are now deeply flooded where they weren't previously, because the Trust has returned the floodplain to that, a floodplain. Sadly, the weather gods have now finally left this area saturated and unable to help. We keep our fingers crossed for a dry spring.
Low-tech honey treatment could save the National Health Service millions of pounds. A simple low-tech honey treatment could dramatically cut infections after caesarean births and save the NHS millions of pounds, a Winchester study has found. Nationally, 1 in 10 women who give birth by a caesarean section develop an infection in the scar, which causes pain and discomfort, affecting 14,000 women per year. Not only are these complications distressing to the women and their families, warn researchers, they are also costly to the NHS. But Dr. Matthew Dryden, consultant microbiology at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Evidence indicates a single application of a substance called surgy honey immediately after surgery could reduce infection rates by 60%. Surgy honey offers a simple, cost-effective intervention to reduce surgical site infection in women undergoing caesarean sections. The study compared 186 women who had a single application of surgy honey after a C-section at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester between October 2012 and January 2013, with 590 caesarean births in the previous 9 months. Infection rates at the hospital are half the national average. The honey treatment was applied to the sterile dressing by the obstetrician or theatre nurse at the end of the operation. Women who give birth by C-section currently have their skin disinfected by surgeons before the incision is made to reduce bacteria, but it's not standard practice to use antimicrobial dressings. A reason for this may be that most chemical antiseptics can be damaging to healing tissue, suggests the study. Healing Honey International as a wound care product. While all honey contains natural antibacterial agents, surgy honey has been modified to make it even better at beating bugs. The new findings suggest surgy honey could change the way surgical wounds are managed and reduce the use of antibiotics. Further studies are needed to investigate its potential, said researchers. In addition to the health advantages to women, the NHS could profit from an estimated £5 million savings if Sergi Honey led to a 60% fall in infections. Sergi Honey is approved for use in the UK and other parts of the world as a medical device, but is not yet commercially available. It was developed by entrepreneur Ian Stables, former managing director of Halfords, and his son Stuart, who owned a farm in Chile with beehives and enlisted the help of scientists in Ireland to investigate honey's healing properties.
Licensing chiefs to set to decide on Boomtown expansion. The owner of the site of a major music festival looks set to push for increased noise levels. Licensing chiefs met in Winchester on Tuesday to review landowner Peveril Bruce's licence to stage events at his Matterley Bowl estate just outside Winchester, following several noise-related breaches at last year's Boomtown Festival. The meeting heard that noise complaints dropped from 80 in 2012 to 12 in 2013, and Mr. Bruce's licence was renewed with some further conditions attached, such as producing a post-event evaluation report. As the Chronicle went to press, the committee was due to gather again yesterday, Wednesday, to consider the licence of Boomtown themselves, which wants to increase capacity from 30,000 in 2013 to 38,000 this year and to 45,000 in 2015 and 49,999 in 2016. That meeting coincides with the inquest today of Eleanor Rowe, 18, from Glastonbury, who died at Boomtown on August the 8th last year. The possible cause is said to be ketamine and alcohol toxicity. Speaking after yesterday's meeting, Mr. Bruce said, "We're proud of the cultural diversity we bring, and we work very hard to minimise the impact of Boomtown on the community." The nationally accepted noise level for those events is 70 decibels, and we're operating on an imposed level of 65 decibels. We strive to manage the effect on the community, but equally, if you're allowed to do 30 miles an hour in the 30 mile per hour zone, you should be able to go at 30 miles an hour. The new licence agreement includes a condition that Mr. Bruce will submit a post-event evaluation. Opponent David Payne from Cheriton said the number of events that Mr. Bruce is allowed to stage at the Matterley Bowl should be cut from 24 days to just 9. Peter Kilminster of Tichborne, in a letter to the council, said Matterley events had a history of crime, disorder, traffic problems, litter, deaths due to illegal drug abuse, antisocial behaviour and harm to wildlife. Many locals have said disruption from the event is acceptable, and Chris Sparks of Allsford Road, opposite the Boomtown site, said noise, pollution and organisation had improved in recent years.
Lion Dance heralds start of Chinese New Year, and this also article includes a lovely photograph in colour of the Chinese lion with some very attractive Chinese people around it, who are the staff from the Tanoshi restaurant celebrating the Chinese New Year with their lion dance. A damp and grey Winchester was lit up with colour during Chinese New Year celebrations last Thursday. A lion dance parade saw members of the city's Chinese community dance their way from the upper high street towards the city centre, all in a good cause. To celebrate the Chinese New Year, organiser Anita Hui orchestrated the lions in the ceremonial parade, which raised exactly £328.88, a lucky number in Chinese culture. "We had to top it up a bit to get it to that number," Anita said, "but it's all for the charity Trinity to help the homeless. It was such a shame it was raining so heavily, because the performance at the Buttercross would have been a real highlight of the parade." The celebration started this morning at the university for all of the Chinese students there, and then we headed to our restaurant, Tanoshi, where we had red pouches hanging from the ceiling with special letters in them, she added. The lions are meant to eat the letters for good fortune.
Poachers' dogs are confiscated. Two poachers have had their dogs confiscated in a legal first in Hampshire. Lee Cooper, 31, and Walter Smith, 25, were caught with dogs at Quarley, near Andover, magistrates heard. Cooper of Lebanon Road, Redbridge, and Smith of Ringwood Road, Totten, admitted entering land at night as a trespasser with the intention of taking game. Aldershot magistrates fined Cooper £825 and Smith £620. The two dogs involved were ordered to be forfeited and rehomed by the police, the court was told. A not guilty plea was accepted by a third defendant. Basingstoke magistrates also fined Maurice Cole, 46, from Fallowfield, Yateley, £165 plus court costs after he admitted daytime poaching in Whitchurch. The court ordered the forfeiture of two of his three dogs. These are the first prosecutions by officers in Hampshire where courts have ordered the forfeiture of dogs used in poaching or hare-coursing activity. Hampshire Police Country Watch officers have established contacts that allows forfeited canines to be rehomed across the UK. Poaching is a chronic problem in Hampshire and causes criminal damage to fences, destroys crops and creates fear in isolated communities.
Poet Joan is County's Bard. A University of Winchester lecturer has been named Hampshire Poet for 2014. Joan McGavin, pictured below, Associate Creative Writing Lecturer, stood out from more than 50 poets who put themselves forward for a high-profile role awarded by Hampshire County Council biannually. As the county's chief bard, Joan will advocate the pleasures of reading and writing and helping organise literary-themed events. She will also write poems to help commemorate local council projects and activities. Joan, who works in the university's Department for English, Creative Writing and American Studies, said, "I'm honoured and thrilled to have been chosen for this important award, and also a little daunted." Her first collection of works, Flannel Graphs, was published by Oversteps Books in 2011. Her writing has been published in magazines and anthologies. Joan succeeds fellow writer and University of Winchester lecturer Brian Evans-Jones, who was Hampshire Poet for 2012, and there's a very happy smiling photograph of the lady concerned.
And now we have an obituary for George Hardy, poet and magazine publisher, a man proud of his Scottish roots. Scottish poet George Hardy died recently after many years' residence in Beerwheat Road, Winchester. Aged 80, his funeral was very Scottish in character, with a coffin draped in the blue and white Scottish saltire, while a piper played. The Reverend Peter Seal, rector of St Paul's Winchester, officiated. George was born in Hamilton, and his interest in independence for his native land was obvious early when he became a town councillor for the Scottish National Party in the late 1960s. He was a buildings estimator by trade and came south with his wife Veronica and children Gordon, Caroline and Stuart, each of whom has settled in the Eastleigh or Winchester areas. George was a regular contributor to Lallans, Lowlands, the Edinburgh-based literary magazine, which publishes poetry, prose and drama in the Lowland Scots dialect, in which Scotland's greatest poet Robert Burns wrote. One poem, called in English One Among Many, is a cry of rage at World War I that sent millions to their deaths, in particular from his own family. Private George Hardy, aged 20, lost without trace in December 1914. He is one of the 55,000 commemorated at the Menin Gate. In addition to work for Lallans, George was a co-founder in the 1970s of the Scottish literary magazine Chapman. While he had a ruddy sense of humour, he was also a deep thinker, his son Gordon said. At his funeral at Basingstoke Crematorium on January the 27th, piper Malcolm Stainforth played a number of tunes, including Highland Cathedral and the Skyboat Song. George's wife Veronica died 18 months ago. Their sons and daughter survived them.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Choiley and Michael Turner. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Lynn Parker.
Goodbye.
Michael Wyard.
Goodbye.
And Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet, and when you put your label in the wallet, please ensure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.